Aloha and welcome to Deep Dive into Water Safety. Hawaii continues to face one of the highest drowning rates in the nation. We know that water competency saves lives. We know that ocean knowledge matters. We know that education matters. Yet, despite what we know, we continue to lose residents and visitors in our waters. Perhaps the challenge isn't simply providing more information. Perhaps the challenge is finding ways to help people connect that information to their lives, their families, and their communities. Today's guest may help us think about that challenge in a different way. Sarah Keaulani Gu is an award-winning journalist and author of Kuleana, A Story of Family, Land, and Legacy in Old Hawaii. What begins as a story about her family's efforts to protect ancestral lands on Maui becomes a much deeper exploration of identity, belonging, responsibility, and what we owe future generations. As Hawaii works to create a stronger culture of water safety, there may be lessons in Sarah's story. How do we move beyond facts and statistics? How do we create messages that resonate? How do we tell stories that help us people understand their responsibility to one another and to the places that sustain us? Today, we'll explore those questions through the lens of Kuleana and discuss what it might teach us about building a safer future for Hawaii. Welcome to Deep Dive into Water Safety, Sarah. Thank you so much for coming on. And I'm looking forward to talking about your book, Kuleana, Land, Legacy, and History,
Thank
Land,
you so
Family,
much.
Land, and Legacy in Old Hawaii, excuse me.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
Let's start before we get into Kuleana, which I think is the big piece of all this. It's the title in your book. Let's give people, our listeners, some background. The property tax increase arrived in 2019 and forced your family into action. At what point did you realize this wasn't just a family effort to save land, but a story you need to write as a book? Was there a specific moment when Kuleana began taking shape?
Great question. Great question. I've lived the last 20 years plus as a journalist in Washington, D.C., yet I've always felt so connected to this property. My grandmother and all the generations before us have cared for on Maui, in a really remote part of Maui near Hana. And I always somehow in the back of my mind knew that this property, this land, this aina would come for me and be our responsibility. And so when I heard this news through my father, that this property tax, we were hit with this property tax, and it wasn't just us, it was we our cousins have property that's adjacent that had also suffered the same property tax hike. It felt like this existential threat. It felt like, I knew this property had been in our family for more than 175 years, and we always treasured and valued this and felt like this was our honor to, the past, to the days of the Hawaiian Kingdom, and our responsibility to care for it, to honor that and maintain those ties. So it put us into action. Now, whether writing it to a book, I actually, had always wanted to write a more accurate narrative about Hawaii as a journalist, and I didn't really want to write a memoir, but I think that once this happened to our family, I realized that telling the story of this land and also researching the history of what had happened to it in years past was really the story of the Native Hawaiian people, and it deserved to be told.
Yes, and I think what makes this book really interesting is that you are an amazing journalist and you're Hawaiian. And I would like to talk to you about Kuleana. We've often translated as responsibility, but your book suggests it means something much deeper. After writing Kuleana, what does Kuleana mean to you today?
Great question. And, I decided to give the book this title because to me it represented the journey to understand the meaning of that word. And I understood it like you described it at first, just literally translated as responsibility, because that's the way my grandmother talked about it. Our this land is our kuleana. However, I think that I had to really take a journey to understand kuleana from an American kind of responsibility framework, frame of mind, to a Native Hawaiian understanding of kuleana. And what I mean by that is, in American sense, responsibility is the thing we have to do, the checklist in our back of our mind, the thing that maybe we want to do, but don't we have to do, but we don't want to do. It's often a burden. It's today. It's, the responsibility that could be onerous. Whereas kuleana is an honor. It is prideful. It is linked to generations. In this case, it is linked to land, to aina. It is much more tied to the earth. It is tied to the community. And it is about, what we owe those who come before us and those who come after us. And so to me, that honoring that was so much more important and had such a deeper meaning. And I got a sense of that always, but I think that being able to actually honor that, not just among myself, but my cousins and generationally with my uncles and aunties, making this decision and this effort really brought us together to work together in a way that, perhaps we wouldn't have if this, crisis wouldn't have happened. And so I think the concept of kuleana is something that Hawaiians can teach the world.
Well, that's a really good point, and it goes to what we're trying to do in water safety, which we will explore at a different time. And there's a lot of history that you've put forth in this book. You talk about a word called mahele. Can you talk about that, what that means, what the significance of that is, and how important that was?
Yes, the mahele was perhaps, I think, the most significant historical act to take place in Hawaii because it totally upended the Hawaiian way of life. So, in 1848, King Kamehameha III declared through the mahele that private ownership of land could occur, and more importantly, specifically laid out what that private ownership looked like and actually granted parcels of land, or began the process of granting parcels of land across all the islands. That quickly, within just a decade, flipped the entire way of life upside down. That began the whole process of gobbling up of land for sugarcane plantation to expand rapidly, and displacement of land and that connection of land for a lot of Native Hawaiian people. That's not to say that Native Hawaiian people didn't have their own grants of land. In fact, my ancestor is one of those people who received land through the mahele. So, and in some ways, it's kind of a miracle that some of this land even still existed in our family, all the way back to the mahele. But that's actually also, the exception rather than the rule. So, going from a system of, subsistence farming to and community living, where you live off the land, and to one in which is driven by, property ownership and capitalism, is really the huge transition, the kind of marking of the before and after is what the mahele was.
Yeah, I just want to bring up one more issue with that because I think, as Kaina Makua told me in his interview, water safety is just the tip of the spear in terms of what we're dealing with. And what you say in the book is they were living in a different world on America, a real estate transaction world. It was all logical and practical to them. A deal's a deal. And I felt that was a really important piece that I think we're still dealing with today. So,
Yeah. And nowhere else better than, I mean, more is that underscored than in Hawaii, where you have, the wealthiest people in the world who are going after some of the most beautiful, most sought after pieces of land in the world, right? I think that's it, nowhere in the world is that more pronounced and in conflict where you have this tension playing out in the most pronounced way, where we're still living with this that mehele, we're still living with the consequences of that today, where we have these different tensions and values of how do we value land? What is it? What is the responsibility? Are we looking at it as a something to extract value from in money, or are we looking at it as something that is the foundation of our connection to community? Are those mutually exclusive, and can they coexist? I mean, that is kind of the fundamental question that Hawaii has been grappling with for centuries.
It's well said, and you talk about stewardship in terms of your land and what people felt as a culture. You grew up away from Hawaii. Did you feel understanding what it means to be Hawaiian change as you researched and wrote this book?
Great question. Yeah, I think that I always grew up with a sense that being Native Hawaiian was really a part of who I was, even though I grew up in Southern California. And the reason why is because my grandparents both grew up in Hawaii, and my grandmother was half Hawaiian, and they really carried on all of those traditions and raised us with those traditions. And later in my life, my grandparents moved back to Hawaii, so I feel like I had a lot of that connection. But I think I did wrestle with, I didn't grow up knowing the language. I didn't grow up with a lot of knowledge that, of course, you do grow up with understanding. I didn't speak pidgin. I still don't, right? So I sound different. I think that I don't fit in the same ways. But I think that I do, what I did love was I love, researching. I love history. I love understanding everything I didn't know. I had to use my journalistic skills to find out answers. And I think the more I learned, the kind of like, I don't know, passionate I became about sharing, I think, an alternative and I think more truthful narrative about Hawaii that I think Americans don't know. And I thought that that was so strange and frankly wrong, given that this is a state that was the most recent, the youngest to join our nation, and yet we know the least about, and also the unique position of being once its own nation. And we just seem to gloss over that and not want to know its history for some reason. And the two narratives about Hawaii are that it's beautiful vacation spot, bucket list vacation, and Pearl Harbor. That's it. There's so much more, and every time I would learn more, every time I would be with my family in Hawaii, I would be really bothered by this juxtaposition and felt that I wanted to put at least one book on the shelf that would tell the truer story.
What would you say to Native Hawaiians who live far from Hawaii but want to reconnect with their culture and ancestry? And we've had lots of people having to move off the islands, as you know, because of economic reasons. And what you're saying about what people know, Americans know about Hawaii, is very limited and pretty superficial. And your research and your ability as a journalist has put together an amazing story that I think if people would take the time to read this, they'd learn a lot more about what Hawaii means and how they can have a kulihana themselves about Hawaii.
Thank you so much for that question. I mean, I think that my book comes out at a really important time when, as you know, more Native Hawaiians live outside of Hawaii than on the islands. And I think that this book forces us to ask these really uncomfortable questions, which is, what is Hawaii without Hawaiian people? And how do we, as Hawaiian people who live outside as a diaspora, continue to maintain our culture? We can't all move back. I don't think that that's realistic. And although we'd like to, some of us, I think that we have to think about, we're raising children outside of the islands. And I think through my own experience, I do think it's possible to still try to maintain those ties and practice your culture, but you have to be very intentional. And so my message is, number one, you are Hawaiian enough. It's not about what your skin looks like, or whether you have a Hawaiian name, or what color your hair is, or whether you grew up on the islands or not. I think it's about, what is your connection? What is your how called do you feel? Do you hear the kaheya? And, what is your lineage, your heritage? And do you practice it? Do you have kuleana? What is your kuleana? And I think that those are different answers for different people. They're different answers for different people in the same family, right?
Right.
And so there's no judgment about that, but there's nobody who's going to should judge you. I think those are all very personal decisions. And I think that we get so wrapped up into what other people think that we all just have to focus on ourselves and what matters to us, what matters to our family, our future generations, and what we feel called to do and to be. And the second one is, I think that as a collective, I see a lot of this conversation happening now is as a diaspora and tied to Hawaii, like as Kanaka, we have to also think about how do we help support the diaspora? How do we make sure that there are, for example, like a lot of halau across the world? How can we be supportive of that? That's one important way that the culture is maintained, but that's just one. So I think that this is an interesting time where I'm seeing a lot of this dialogue, this conversation going on. So I hope that it's one that's supportive. I hope that's one that continues, because if it doesn't, it doesn't look like there's a way forward, right?
Right. But I think you're hopeful, and in your book you write about how hula made a difference, and you just talked about supporting halaus. Could you talk just a little bit about how that made a difference for you?
Yeah, for me, I really struggled because I think that parenting, I've three kids, and it wasn't until my kids started to get at elementary school age where I realized, like, if I just take my kids to Hawaii like every few years or every other year, that's not really enough for them to feel Hawaiian. And I realized I'd given them Hawaiian names, like I have a Hawaiian name, middle name, but I worried, I panicked actually, like this is not enough for them. And I wanted them to feel as Hawaiian as I did. So we joined a local halau, believe it or not, in Washington, D.C., all the way over here. There are a few. And as soon as I walked in the door, I was immediately felt like I was in a room full of aunties and uncles. And it was amazing. There are tons of people here who have military connections or just are here working in various roles, temporary or permanent, and love Hawaii and know hula and are, have all kinds of connections. And I learned hula like for real, like, in my 40s and with my children. And it was beautiful. And it really taught me when you learn hula, you also have to learn the language, right? Because you're telling a story. And so it allowed us to deeply immerse ourselves in something ground in a way that I think we couldn't have gotten anywhere else. And then I sent my kids to Kamehameha summer program. So it was a way that kept building on itself. So this is what I mean by being intentional. And now I think, had I not done that, my children pr probably would have had a different experience and connection. Now it's up to them, what that looks like going forward. But I think this is the kind of thing that, especially if you're a parent, you have to ask yourself. We don't talk about enough. We have so many people who are in these mixed cultural, partner relationships. And if you aren't intentional about it, you lose it for that next generation. So let's have that conversation. I think we owe it to ourselves and our kids.
Well, let's just move on to the one piece you talked about, Hawaiian Renaissance in the 70s and 80s, and you believe that we're experiencing that today. Can you talk more about that?
Yes, I mean, I loved reading about and learning about, my great grandmother's role in the kind of small role in the revival of the Hawaiian language. My great grandmother was one of the few Native Hawaiian speakers, and was interviewed in the 1970s as part of a large project to bring the Hawaiian language back and get it taught in schools again in the 70s. 60, late 60s, 70s. And now I think that I do see so much of our culture being practiced in amazing ways, not just across the islands, but also among the diaspora. And what I mean by that is I love that I go into the airport and I hear Hawaiian language. I love that I hear it on the radio. I love that I see halau. I've been in contact with people who are practicing hula in, Europe, in Florida, in Texas, in Seattle. I've connected with them as I've written this book. I've heard from them as I've written this book. People want to, do lei hulu. They want to, practice, the revival of the Hawaiian kakao. Just you name it. It's beautiful to see. And this intentional practice and desire to learn what our ancestors did before. And, chief of war is a great, amazing accomplishment to see. And I never thought in my life I would see an entire series in Hawaiian language. And it just brought tears to my eyes to see that embraced in a, mainstream Apple TV, produced series. It's incredible. So I think that we have to celebrate like all these huge milestones and leadership that we're seeing across our diaspora.
That's well said. I would like to move into our visitors. Hawaii welcomes millions of visitors each year. What do you hope visitors understand about the deeper meaning of place and belonging when they come here? That's a pretty big open-ended question, but.
Yeah, well, one goal for this book I mentioned was to write a new narrative about Hawaii, but the second one was to open the eyes of at least some of the 9 million annual visitors who come to Hawaii. For those curious travelers who want to understand Hawaii in a deeper way, that they would come and be an educated visitor. That's what I try to do wherever I move about the world. And understand its history and understand its people, understand its context to be a responsible traveler. And I think that a lot of people who come to Hawaii have that intention. I hope they do. I get that question a lot. And to, not just come and take, but to come and appreciate, come to understand, come to take in all of the culture and what Hawaii has to offer, to come and understand aloha. And that exchange of breath is both ways, not just a one way. And I think that we have a long ways to go, but I do see a lot of positive movement on that. I'd like to see there's a lot of Native Hawaiians now involved in tourism leadership. In kind of steering how that is led and what it looks like. And I am excited to see that. I'd like to see more of that in the future. And I think that's changing kind of what the stereotype has been in the past. And to make it more authentic, more real, I think that's what people seek in travel anyway. So, there's a long ways to go, but I think I'm hoping that my book can be one part of that, one tiny part of that solution.
I think it can be, Sarah. We've had several people on here, Dwayne DeSoto, who played the Duke and Ambassador of Aloha. He's talked about how we've neglected our youth. Kaimakua's talked about some things that I'll mention in a minute, but we had the Mayor Kawakami, on the show twice. He started our show because he cares so deeply about water safety, and he was just on recently. And he said something that relates to exactly what your book is talking about. What he said was, "I don't care where you come from. As soon as you land on Kauai and put your feet on our soil, you are part of Ohana. But with that comes kuleana, comes responsibility like any family, and everybody has some weight to carry when it comes to looking out for one another, making sure everybody is safe, and also educating themselves about ocean safety."
I love that. And I feel like this is not just Hawaii. I feel like this is becoming a more global message to a lot of places around the world. I was in Iceland last year, which I feel like is Hawaii's cold cousin. It's very similar, and it's just a lot colder. But it reminded me of Hawaii. It's volcanic, it's beautiful, it's very ecologically sensitive. And there is similarly a huge effort to educate every single visitor before they land, get off that plane. And so I think that if we can make this, a larger part of just the travel experience, it should be, yes, Hawaii is really important, but I think that we have to think also broader about just traveling about the world, that this is just make this part of every experience. That is the expectation. And that makes this job for Hawaii a lot easier.
Yes, I think that's well said. We've interviewed people all over the world, and the message is the same for water safety. So you've just given me an idea to talk to somebody in Iceland.
Highly recommend you go.
Okay, that sounds like a So if we're talking about water safety, but I think I am going to look up somebody to talk about water safety in Iceland. Many of the conversations we have on Deep Dive into Water Safety are really conversations about our relationship with place and the ocean and one another. And what you identified, that it's a global world, a global community. We can all learn from this Kuleana message that you have in your book. One thing I kept thinking while reading your book is that people tend to take better care of places they feel connected to. Do you think that applies to safety as well?
I think it does, but I think that, I'm no expert in water safety, but I do think that I think about what the concept of kulyana is, one that is not that Native Hawaiians own. I think it's one that we can take and understand, like, what is my larger kulyana? And that it means that it's a responsibility beyond myself, that is seeing yourself beyond just your own personal life, but your larger responsibility to a community, your larger responsibility to your parents and your children, seeing yourself in a larger context as a steward, right? It really actually does mean more stewardship. And so I think that is the question that I want people to ask themselves is, what is my kuleana? You may not have land from the king, like I did, and I do. And that's fine, but it doesn't mean that you don't have kuleana, right?
Right.
So I think that is what I am trying to get people to think about, because this concept and this word is still applies to you. It's still meaningful to you, no matter where you live, no matter who you are, no matter what your ancestry is. I do think, as we said in the beginning, like, this is something Hawaiians can teach the world. It's a different way of looking at the world and moving through it.
I agree with that. There was an article I read, I guess now at this time, 3 years ago, because the backstory on all of water safety is the United States didn't have a comprehensive water safety plan. And a couple of years ago, they did, while other countries had. And so people went, wow, we guess we better have a United States water safety plan. And Hawaii was one of the first, besides California, to actually create one. And in the document, which I'll send to you, which was written by Allison Schaefers, who's a journalist for the Honolulu paper. And she wrote this, and it's very well done because the governor had said, if you take this and read it and take it to heart, we can change lives. And one of the things right up front in the thing is, but somehow we've lost our way. Water is taking too many lives. And they talk about culture, they talk about kuleana in this. And I think you're right. The article came out and said Hawaii should be leading in water safety. And I think that's the vision. I think that's what you're saying, that there's a lot about Hawaiian culture that people can learn from. And I think your book makes such a good case for understanding history. And as you said, what is your kuleana? We have a lot of visitors that come to Hawaii because they want to experience our beaches and ocean, like you said. What do you wish they understood before they got here?
Oh, So much. And I get asked this question a lot. I mean, I want to be clear that my book is not an anti-tourism book. It is not, my message is not don't come. My message is to come with some knowledge ahead of time. Don't get on a plane and kind of like just sit on the beach and kind of erase your brain. You know, I understand that. But I also think, like, if you want to do that, there's a lot of other places you can go that are also less expensive, you know? And so I just want them to think about, like, Hawaii is not the experience to just sit on a beach and do nothing. It is a place to come because you're excited about learning a culture and being immersed in one. And that is really, I think, a big attraction of coming and understanding and getting the very special experience of that you can get nowhere in the world. And also part of that is also the environment, right? You're getting the plants and animals that you don't see anywhere else in the world. And I think the to answer your question, it is about coming and with some knowledge about how to move through that environment, that very, very special environment. It's kind of like it's like going to the Galapagos. You don't go to such a fragile place like that without totally understanding the, you know, fragility of the place you're going into and how to move through it safely, how to move through it without, you know, disturbing what is special about it without understanding the history of it. So I'm not saying you have to have read five books, but I do think that you should go in with some appreciation and come in with curiosity, you know, and, you know, humility, a little bit of humility. So I think those are some basics. And, you know, of course, have some fun.
Yes, that's right. Tainamakau was asked in our interview by Kaleigh Clark, and this goes to what you've been talking about. What is in store for Lihue, and which means our people, and as you would understand. And what he said, and we haven't moved on this, is he said, I think we've been celebrating ceremonies. But we need to create new ceremonies. Maybe there should be a new ceremony for water safety. I thought that was very interesting when we talk about bringing the culture into water safety to help people understand and appreciate it.
I think that's true, and I also see like a lot of interesting ways in which our culture and you know things that we value as part of our culture are being adapted to modern times. You know, I love the way hula has evolved, for example, in different ways to be more relevant to today and interpreted for today. And I think that that makes a lot of sense, right? And so that's a way that we evolve as people. We're not the same as we were 100 years ago. And so that is natural. Our language is also changing constantly. So that's one thing that's exciting about reviving a culture and keeping it alive is you also have to move it forward.
Your great Uncle Taki is one of the most memorable figures in the book. What did he teach you about Kuleana that no one else could have taught?
Oh, well, thanks for asking about him. My Uncle Taki lived in Hana, Maui his whole life. He's my grandmother's brother. And after my grandmother died in 2005, he really became like my surrogate grandfather, my, you know, grandparent in my grandmother's place, who really became my guide to all of our family history, all of really Hawaii in Hana and our property and our family story. And, you know, I really couldn't have written the book without him. I really couldn't have understood my own Hawaii story without him. And, you know, he's kind of like, he was this great character and he was kind of like very small, you know, short, kind of half Japanese, half Hawaiian man who walked with kind of a bow-legged, But he was like the mayor of Hana. Like everybody knew him in town. He would drive around with in a truck with his arm out the window, and everybody yell at him as say hi, how's it, uncle, as you drove by. I think maybe every town in Hawaii has a guy like this. But that was Uncle Tucky. And I think that he to me represents that aloha, that that commitment of generations to each other, right? That is so special, I think, in Hawaii, of that he really underscored the importance of knowing and caring for that, kuleana of our land, of our family. He fought so hard much of his life to protect the kuleana of the heiau that's related to our family, as well as the aina, our land in Hana. And so through example, of people and how they live their lives, not really so much with words, really conveyed the values of what we needed to live up to for that next generation.
One last question. If there was one lesson from Kuleana that you hope stays with readers long after they finish the last page, what would it be, Sarah?
Well, you probably know that my answer to this. I think we talked about it a lot, which I want them to ask themselves about Kuleana, understand what it is, and I want them to ask themselves what theirs is. And I hope that becomes a question that maybe you don't answer when you read the book right away. Maybe it's something that you think about for a few days, a few weeks, a few years. That's okay. But I do want to leave the question there, and I do want people to understand the true meaning in the way of Kuleana, in the way that I came to understand it, and appreciate that for what the Hawaiians are trying to have lived through, have really understood in the way that they live their lives, and what they are trying to teach you.
Sarah, mahalo for joining us. One of the questions we've been exploring throughout this conversation is how Hawaii can create a stronger culture of water safety. We have research, we have data, we have programs, we have dedicated people doing important work every day, but culture is built through stories. Kuleana reminds us that people connect to responsibility when they understand how it relates to who they are, where they come from, and what they hope to leave behind. Perhaps that's the one lessons water safety can learn from your work, Sarah. Maybe the challenge isn't simply teaching people about risks, maybe it's helping them understand why water safety matters to their family, their community, and future generations. In that sense, water safety becomes more than prevention, it becomes an expression of kuleana. For those interested in learning more, Sarah's book, Kuleana, A Story of Family, Land, and Legacy in Old Hawaii, is available through local bookstores and online retailers. Sarah will be also visiting Kauai on July 13th at the Lihue Public Library and Waimea Public Library, and on July 14th at Talk Story Bookstore in Kamakani. Sarah, thank you again for joining us. We will put links to all the information, and Sarah's website is saragu.com, where you can find everything about her and her book. I'd like to read one more thing before we finish, Sarah, which is a review which I thought actually expresses how I feel. Quote, it's a Washington Post book review. Quote, if just a fraction of the millions of annual Hawaii visitors read Kuleana and get a more subtle, more accurate understanding of these singular islands, it will be a cause for celebration. A serious book by a Hawaiian journalist from a major publishing house is a most welcome arrival. Thank you again, Sarah, for coming on the show.
Mahalo nui. It's been so great. Thank you so much.